Okay, thank you. So it looks like I made it. I just landed. So this just came straight here. I have to pay the registration fee yet. So. Okay. I managed to skip. Okay, so as promised, I will also talk about superconductor, but it looks like it's the title is from somewhere else, but I'll talk about superconductor as well. So so my talk will focus on this Weyl fermion realization in condensed matter, or actually all of physics, because there's no realization in particle physics, and topological superconductors, and how this helical topological superconductor, the idea, could also be applied to Weyl physics. In other words, is there a way to realize a Weyl superconductor? So that sort of thing. So since topological superconductor, to make a connection to Ali's wonderful talk, I will take the advantage of presenting topological superconductor first. So that conceptually there is a continuation, but then also it will make a way to connect to Weyl fermions in some way through topological insulators. So my this is sort of my overview of my talk. So I'm not going to talk about topological insulator, but then these ideas, how these ideas have led to other related states of matter, and mostly I'll talk about, of course, helical pairing and Weyl fermion stuff. But this is sort of the broad overview, but I will try my best to make sure that you get a feel how these phases of matter are connected to topological insulators, of course, through some sort of phase transition, their distinct state of matter. And so my talk will actually mostly focus on realizing them in material space, not so much on the theory space. I mean, it's many key players in the theory are in this room, so I'm not going to review that aspect of it. So it's mostly experiments. Okay, so let me start out thanking my students and collaborators. This is the Princeton ARPAS team, and much of the work I will be presenting is a collective ARPAS. The ARPAS measurements I'll be presenting is a collective effort of Suyang, Ilya, Nasser, Madhab, Guang, and Hao. And then, of course, ARPAS is enormously supported by a number of things, chemistry, materials growth, and the superconductor side. We're working with Feng Cheng Chou, Nitin Shamarth on the MBE films. And we also have some growth effort in my lab in the Weyl fermion case. We're working with mainly these two groups, Shuang Xia and Feng Cheng Chou. Chang Long's samples are wonderful. So is Ramon Shankar's samples. He's actually right now he's in India. He moved to India recently. And then we carried out ARPAS experiments. The energy tunability, photon energy tunability requires a synchrotron. You cannot tune laser continuously. So we have to carry out these experiments around the world. At the Advanced Light Source in Berkeley, Swiss Light Source in Switzerland, and also at SLAC. In fact, when I was a student, I was involved in those beamline developments and in-station developments in these two labs. Okay, so let me very briefly, 1 second, reminder of what is a topological insulator. You have a surface Dirac cone. This is spin momentum locked, and this single Dirac cone spin momentum lock is a platform for Majorana. So the topological insulator case has been extensively studied, and there's a very clear case. There's a number of materials that are being developed, have been developed, and we certainly by now we have highly insulating, very high quality topological insulators where you can see quantum Hall effect. In some cases, they're actually better than, at least the data looks better than some of the conventional quantum Hall materials. So it's really in the material direction is really moving forward. Okay, so we just heard a nice talk by Ali about this time reversal breaking topological superconductors. As you all know, these are in some way analog of quantum Hall fluids because they're time reversal breaking in some way, and their theoretical origin or those ideas go way back. It's not new. A number of groups are also working on nanowires, And all these things are, there are many beautiful, wonderful development in that field. So my talk is not going to, what I'm going to talk about is a bit different in the sense that I'm interested in probing whether, what is the, not the superconducting analog of the quantum Hall fluid, but how about the, what is the superconducting of analog of the Z2 topological insulator? In this case, it's time reversal invariant, so you have a helical topological superconductors. And another thing I'm not going to go into, that a number of groups have done transport and STM on these Z2 topological insulators in their superconducting version. And I'm not going to review that literature. It's huge. And some people report zero bias peak and all that. There are all sorts of debates there. And what I'm going to particularly focus on is spin resolve photoemission. And that, as far as I know, we are the only group uniquely have published on that, at least. So why are we interested in doing spin resolve photoemission spectroscopy in this case, as opposed to transport or STM or other things? Because the photoemission has its own unique aspect. If you do transport or STM, you'll see a zero bias peak, and now whether the zero bias peak is of non-abelian origin, meaning whether it's Majorana or not, there are all sorts of issues that need to be settled. So what we are trying to do is a different algorithm. It's a different platform with a different algorithm, but this algorithm actually in principle also applies to those things. So sooner or later we'll also get to that. So what is that algorithm? So what I'm trying to say that with photoemission spectroscopy, we have some way to spectroscopically resolve this proximity effect. So all these topological superconductivity, Majorana, all these things are in some ways a superconducting proximity effect with a topological state, right? So can we decisively probe this helical Cooper pairing? What sort of technique, what sort of resolution is needed to do that? Can we actually probe the topological superconducting gap? And can we actually probe the order parameter? So in other words, so there is a different route to proving topological superconductivity. In other words, in some way, you could say that if your superconductor, by proximity effect, whatever topological superconductor you have realized, whether it is topological or not, that proof is already in its order parameter. So whatever proximity super effect related superconductivity you are observing, whether that is topological or not, its signature should also already be in the order parameter. Order parameter will already tell you whether it can host Majorana or not, or whatever zero bias peak many people are observing here has anything to do with that. So what we are trying to do in material space and also in spectroscopic space, trying to connect this with zero bias, observed zero bias peak by many people, and we want to see whether that is, there is a correlation. So in other words, whether zero bias peak has experimentally speaking, topological connection. So this is I believe this is a very strongly constraining methodology. Okay. So the Majorana platform in this case is the classic Fouquet platform. Here you start with a topological insulator and consider the proximity effect with a superconductor, a gapped S-wave superconductor, and the key aspect comes from the fact that on the topological insulator, you have the Dirac cone. You have a half Dirac gas. You have a spin momentum lock. Half of the degrees of freedom are missing, or you're left with half of the degrees of freedom. So this remarkable paper by Fu and Kane, they noticed, they theoretically worked out that this state, in fact, this is a slide I borrowed from Charlie. This is like half of an ordinary superconductor, and it has a highly non-trivial ground state. In the original proposal, it has a zero mode inside the vortex. I mean, So that's sort of, in fact, this proposal got the field excited in looking for Maharana. It has other aspects. It's different from the chain in Maharana, because the vertex Maharana is in some ways quantum. So it's quantum dynamics and all sorts of things. It's coming additionally. There's a lot of new physics to it. And I'll also get to, at some point, that the quantum phase transition between the helical superconductor and the Dirac metal could also be, there are proposals that critical point could be supersymmetric. So there's a whole lot of new physics beyond the chain and Maharana. So that's why I think it's important to develop and explore these other channels of exploring this this topological superconductivity. So essential idea, in some way, this is a strong spin orbit state, and if you induce superconductivity there, you cannot form a pure singlet. You must have a singlet triplet mixture in there, and then so in this case you're not using any magnet or anything, so you're not breaking time reversal. So you are time reversal invariant. So you can call it a helical topological superconductor. Of course, the general idea of topological superconductivity is not that new. It goes way back. Maybe helium-3b is already a Maharana platform, right? Because it's a topological superfluid. Volovic has done, and others have done interesting work along that line. And then, of course, Murid proposal in connection to quantum Hall type of thing. So finally, I'm coming to real experiments. So how do we realize this type of thing? So one of the explorations we have is that we want to study the 3D to 2D limit. If we start with a 3D topological insulator, if we come down to 2D, then the proximity effect is much more effective. So in order to do that, in this particular experiment, the films were grown by Nitin Samart's group, and the experimental measurements were done by my group. So the film, making MBE films of topological insulator is not new. This was already initiated by Chikun Shui group in Beijing. They have done a number of interesting works along that line. So what is the new thing we are offering here? That we looked at this spin texture evolution of this film that was not known, but that gave us some very important critical insight about these films, why these films could be quite interesting for a number of different experiments and under what limit. So you can see that from the data that when you are 7QL, for most of the theorists, that 7QL just means 7 nanometer. If your thin film is 7 nanometer thick, then you can see that they have a fully developed Dirac cone. 6 nanometer is also a gapless Dirac cone, but then when you fall below 5, you start to develop a gap, right? So this, you would say that a 6 nanometer film is already a 3D topological insulator. So that 3D to 2D transition in this material system happens around here. And when you develop a 2D film system, so in this particular case, one can calculate that even an odd number of nanometers or QLs give you a quantum spin Hall state or a trivial insulator state. So this is a very rich and interesting system. So you could also do a 2D Maharana type of thing with this film systems. So that's why exploring the system is quite exciting and interesting. So then this is understanding their topological state as a function of thickness. But let's come to the superconductivity part. When you proximatize, you let Cooper pairs tunnel into the topological surface states, what happens? With spin texture, as I said, we can tell whether the Fermi surface, it's in the 3D limit or in the 2D limit, and whether there is a gap or not. And the other nice thing is about ARPES is that at higher energies you get, or at very low energies, you get some bulk sensitivity. So you can actually get some signal from the interface. But in this particular case, it's more complicated because when your film is not too thick, you could also get proximity on the top surface. But that's interesting. That's not directly like original Fukin proposal, but it's meant to be the same thing. So studying the top, very top surface is also interesting. So this is some of the early data. When we were looking at that, so this particular data set, for this particular data set, the substrate is niobium selenide with TC about 7 Kelvin. You can see that when you at 4 Kelvin or 1 Kelvin, you have a coherence peak developing, you have a gap, but at 12 Kelvin or 9 Kelvin above TC, this gap is closed. You have a Fermi step, and the coherence peak is not there. So that's the energy space part of it. There is also momentum space advantage, that ARPS works in momentum space. So then, if these films have bulk and surface bands mixed up at the interface, which is something very difficult to isolate in transport measurements. When you do transport, you get signal from everything. So with ARPS, we can tell that we can set my detector to look only at the Dirac cone, at the interface or on the surface, and see whether the Dirac cone is becoming superconductivity, because that is what is interesting, that that Cooper pair gas will be topological superconductor. So this is the advantage of ARPS over all other techniques here in this particular problem, resolving this particular problem, that we can set to look at the Cooper pairing of the Dirac electrons. And when we do that, we see that this behavior is confirmed, that above the surface substrate temperature, the normal state Fermi edge develops. So this is sort of the full data set, what we are trying to do. Let's say I take a 4-nanometer film, and I take a sample that has Fermi level in the conduction band. So this is the Dirac state, but the film is too thin, so it develops a gap, but that's okay for my purpose of spectroscopically probing the effect, proximity effect in the bulk channel, and compare it with the surface channel. This is actually more useful than having Fermi level here. So this is, so if I look at the Cooper pairing channel at the edge of the band where the surface dominates, the Dirac bands dominate, then we see that just at that point, the electrons at that at those locations, they do Cooper pairing consistent with the substrate TC, and then you can see that as you raise TC, then you develop a Fermi step. So there's the superconducting gap, there's the coherence peak. So then the advantage here, this is what I'm saying, is that if you set your momenta around here to look at the bulk bands, and then you can see that there's a proximity effect also on the bulk band. So this is important because this is a way ARPS allows us to probe what sort of superconducting state, order parameter state, is formed in the bulk band channel, what form is in the surface band channel, and compare and contrast. And then the other advantage here is that in this fence I'll show later, you can dope the surface and place your Fermi level here. Then you'll only see the Dirac helical surface states, right? So then you go to the Fukin limit if your film is little thicker. So this is the build up for that. So now the other thing is that we want to probe whether this proximity-induced superconducting gap has a node, so that we can do a momentum space track, all over the momentum space track, and then we can look for a possible node or whether it's gapped everywhere. We can look at the momentum anisotropy of the gap. So this is sort of the summary of a lot of data. Some of that is shown here. Let me go to the summary. So if we look at the high symmetry directions, we never see a gap when I have the surface states only. When the spin configuration is like this, we don't see any gap, any node. So in other words, it's fully gapped everywhere. But that's good news. We contrasted that with a film grown on high TC superconductor copper oxides, where you have nodes in there. So this is a good platform. I mean, of course, we studied a number of other substrates, but we found that this is a very well-behaved platform for topological superconductivity. But just by looking at data alone, I cannot tell whether it's S-wave or something else, right? So it's good news, but it could also be S-wave. So one way I can reassure you how we do this, feedback loop between materials and spectroscopy. So one example of that, let's say if your film behaves like this, you know all the, by spin arpes you have done, you have exhausted all the possibilities, all the degrees of freedom electron has to offer, right? So then you know your low energy Hamiltonian because there's nothing else left in there, right? So this is the nice thing because electrons can have spin momentum and energy and you are at the near the Fermi level, so you can actually write down the low energy physics just by looking at the data because there's nothing else to be studied. So this is another way to argue that since there is nothing else in the system, so this must lead to helical pairing. So you could do more. One is that you could, as I said, that there is one reason we want the Fermi level to be here, we could try to compare the gap function, the spectral function. I mean, ARPES is measuring the first order Green function in some great detail, so you could look at the self-energy is affected by your order parameter and all sorts of things, and you could try to fit these curves you get at different momenta. For example, this is an effort to fit the surface channel with a BCS S wave. You see discrepancy here, but if you try a PEX plus IPY, you can get improved fitting there. But here, the advantage is you can probe the bulk and the surface on the same data set. You don't have to take a different data set. For example, if you take the bulk, you can fit nicely with the S-wave type of thing, and we see some discrepancy. We have difficulty fitting that with the P-wave. But I'm not saying this is the decisive thing for that, but this allows us to systematically probe, channel, track down all sorts of things, because if we can develop this platform, we can do a whole world of things. So that's what I'm going to get to next. So now then, if you lower the Fermi level to cut the surface states only, that's precisely what the Fukin proposal is, that in your system, you should have only like this, and you want to see that those electrons superconduct. And when you remove the, when you raise the temperature, they should disappear. And then when you do an anisotropic measurement on the gap, you should see this this type of node-less superconductor. Okay, so going beyond that will require additional instrumentation, and we are currently working on that in my lab at Princeton, so there will be interesting things. There are interesting things to address there. So, let me give you a feel. What one of the first thing we can do? We are already doing that a little bit. So there is this nice cool paper by Ashwin last year. Actually, he pointed out to me that this system we are developing, this platform, is interesting from the point of view that if you go from a topological superconducting state to the Dirac metal state, the critical point under certain conditions, there are additional conditions, this critical point could be interesting if you can keep the magnetic moments in plane, not out of plane. And we know from our effort to magnetize topological insulators in many systems, we know a system where actually it maintains in plane, significant degree of in plane moment rather than out of plane. If you do that, under certain condition, and then if you can place the Fermi level at the Dirac, near the Dirac node, this critical point can have interesting, unusual behavior. So this is the experimental effort. So we start out with this, and then we dope the surface, which is effectively gating the surface all the way. So at 3.3 Langmuir, dopant, with a dopant of NO2, we can reach there. And then we can also magnetize this, and we can see that the superconductivity there has effect on magnetism. I mean, of course, TC will be and gap will be affected by magnetic dopant. So this type of experiments are not out of the reach. One of the consequence predictions of the theory is that at that critical point, the Fermi velocity, the fermion and boson of some collective mode will have a similar speed. But this is just one of the things. I mean, this is an initial test. This does not tell us the critical behavior of that. But I'm saying that we can develop this type of platform. How much time I have left? Okay, that's good. That's good. And then there's, beyond that, you could also find such platform naturally out there. Nature always has surprises for you. So we have a number of search effort, and we believe that we are getting close where in the material phase space where to locate them. We may have some preprint coming up, but it's we'll see. We have to do some decisive check. Okay, so now my next topic is about vial semimetal and how this is connected to topological insulator. So I'll get to that in a moment. Let me skip that. Okay, so I believe, at least for me, I became interested in this topic after listening to Arshvin's talk at one of the Aspen meetings, I think in 2010 or 11. And I found that this thing very strange, because as an ARPAS people, we always think of Fermi surface as closed object, right? So I found this very striking. Can Fermi surface be non-closed, right? So this is a very, very unusual thing. So the proposal is that you could, in certain materials, there is some different type of topological order that will lead to a fractional, at least from 2D point of view, fractional Fermi surface. So there are, of course, systematic ways to build this type of thing from TI multilayers. I mean, the heterostructure through fine-tuning. This is beautiful work by Burkov and Balance. And then there are many more proposals on magnetic compounds that may give rise to Fermi arcs. And Fermi arc is, of course, known from the high TC literature, but there the Fermi arc origin is different. It's not topological effect, it's some sort of many body effect. And in terms of the vial point physics, it's also not, it's not terribly new, but I think the topological Fermi arc is the new thing, but the vial point physics, including in the context of crystal, it goes back, goes way back. I think Murakami proposed this inversion breaking concept, how to realize file rather than magnetic broking, TR time reversal broken stuff. So we have, let me get to that. After that meeting with Arshvin, we tried to do two things. Let me move forward a little bit here. This is how this part comes in. We tried to do two things. One is that if you have a, if you realize a topological phase transition, let me actually show the real data. This slide doesn't has a cartoon without the data. Yeah, so this is actually good. So that was the time we just reviewed this topic, that this topological, at the phase transition between band insulator and topological insulators, you can have a 3D Dirac semimetal. This is, that was just, we just finished writing up all that ideas there. So how did that look in experiment? So we started out with a topological insulator, which has selenium in it. We replaced selenium by sulfur. Yeah, we'll get there. And then we could drive a topological phase transition there. And at the phase transition point, you have a 3D Dirac semimetal. And now whether that Dirac semimetal could be topologically protected or not, it's not clear. Of course, it can be protected, that that it can be protected by crystal symmetry. Whether without crystal symmetry it is protected or not, we don't know. So that led to a paper in 2012 where we showed that how inversion breaking ideas taken from Murakami's work can be realized. So this is later summarized in our theoretical calculation paper in this diagram. So you start with a topological insulator, you close the gap, you get two critical points, and if your crystal symmetry is protecting you, these surface states will be protected. If not, then you'll not get. So if you have one Dirac point, then these surface states will not be protected. But then you could break the inversion symmetry. This is Murakami type proposal that will lead to this splitting. Now the rest of the thing is whether this happens and what sort of material it should happen. So let me move forward on that. Yeah. So it has to happen. As I said, it requires breaking the center of symmetry. So then you can look at spin orbit compounds where band inversion type thing has happened, but then the crystal structure has a broken inversion symmetry. So if you have that, then it will split the Dirac into vial. So in this particular case, it's a bit more complex. The band structure here is that you have mirror symmetry. So if you turn off spin orbit, you get Dirac nodal semi-metal type of thing. You get a Dirac ring on these planes. But then when you turn on spin orbit, these rings state split into vial points in this case. And then these vial points, if you consider their projection, you get this structure like that. In this particular case, you have 24 vial nodes, okay? So are they realized in real materials? So that's the challenge here. You have to do two experiments. One, a surface sensitive experiment, one bulk sensitive. And ARPES can do actually both. If you use high energy photons, you are measuring bulk sensitive thing. If you're doing low energy photons, you're surface sensitive, and you match, you see what happens. So this is some of our first data set. You can see that Y and X direction are not the same. It should not be. Actually, some other groups have posted papers. They are showing four-fold symmetry. That cannot be correct. Then you cannot have vial if you show four-fold symmetric data. I don't know whether they're symmetrizing the data or not. The breaking inversion symmetry is the key to vial physics. So in the Y direction, you can see that these surface states, they connect all the way. In the X direction, this connection is less obvious. And then the overall, it's not fourfold. Okay, so let me focus on some of that. I don't have a lot of time, but I'll get to the key slides. So let's say I focus on the vial points where your chiral projected chiral charge is plus minus 2, because that's fun. You have to prove that the states are co-propagating. And not only that, you should have a pair that connecting to the chiral charge plus minus 2. So we focus there, and I mean, of course, we take lots of data sets here. Let me focus on this data set. If you look at gamma y and gamma x, then you can see that you have a pair. And then when you look near the projected chiral charge plus minus 1 x bar, you see these two loops. So they connect the vial points, in theory, in band calculations, they connect the vial points here, and then you have an internal loop. So this is a trivial surface state. In this case, you have a trivial and non-trivial surface states are mixed up. Whereas here, it's chiral charge 2, but you have a pair. So all you have to prove that they are co-propagating, so that they are non-closed loops, and they terminate at the vial point. So we have, over the years, we have developed a number of ARPES subroutine technologies how to prove many things. For example, how to prove that you have a 3D Dirac, how to prove that you have a this Fermi arc states that connect to this degenerate vial points, and then so we can tell the difference based on those ARPES technology. I don't have time to. I can discuss it later on. So now we can track that, whether they're co-propagating or not, and then we can clearly see that co-propagating behavior. So then these are not closed loops. In other words, they're not connecting like that. So now you can see that this is at low energy, where your signal is dominated by the surface spectral function. Now if you go to high energy, 600 eV or 1000 eV, you lose resolution, but your spectral function is dominated by the bulk, significantly bulk with respect to that. And we see that just changing the photon energy in a synchrotron, it makes a big difference. You can see that now these things are all gone, you are seeing points. So then it looks like, we know it's a semi-metal, it looks like it has point Fermi surface, 3D. And this is indeed true. It has a point Fermi surface, a pair of points. So this is the Dirac splitting into vial. So these are the vial states. And how do I know that it's vial? I have to prove, give a topological proof for that. So these are more details that how it split, the Dirac split into vial. And then let me get to the key thing. So this is that splitting. You're seeing that splitting. Now, the key topological connection, this is my last slide on that. The topological connection is that, so the green part is the low energy ARPS, and the red part is the high energy ARPS. In the high energy ARPS, as I showed, that there are only points. It has like point-like Fermi. So this is the vial fermion nodes, here the non-closed Fermi surface, you can see that it doesn't close. But then these are totally two different measurements. Actually, this is measured in Berkeley, this is measured in some other place. And you can see that there is a coincidence, this node, they terminated the nodes. So this is projected on that. So this is sort of my last slide, that by looking at the spin texture, we can tell whether they're co-propagating or forming a closed loop, and then the bulk boundary correspondence, that the vial points project into the arc nodes, and the arcs are they're co-propagating. So this is a proof of chiral charge plus minus two vial fermions in the system. So this is a these are first set of papers, and then there are a number of other papers from Chinese groups. So I put them in sequence, their results, and there are many other groups doing that stuff, but some of these papers have appeared, others have not appeared. So two of our papers are here. These are the first two, at least, published papers. And then I have no time to go to nodal line, so I would just like to conclude. Thank you.
Okay, question?
Shahid, just a naive question.
Yeah.
So this tantalum arsenide, it's a polar or simply non-central symmetric?
It's non-centrosymmetric for sure. I mean,
you're asking.
It is, well, I mean, whether it has ferroelectric thing, and I had to look into the literature. I don't know whether.
Non-centrosymmetric direction is in plane, XY, you said, in the XY plane.
Yeah. No, well, I mean, it's the whole 3D non-centrosymmetric, so it depends which plane you cut, right? Because.
But you cut XY
yeah.
direction.
Yes. Yes, it's not. It should not be fourfold.
So
yes.
X and Y, they are different, you said.
Yes.
Right? So non-central symmetry must be one of those directions.
Yes, yes, yes.
Don't you have a domains?
This, well.
The non-central symmetry should have also the
right, right. Domains. So that, not only that, it has other things. Like, do you mean A domain and B domain? Like you could have mixture
for example,
of the two.
Yeah,
yes, we do. That's why. This is why these experiments are so difficult. We have been trying to do that for a long, long time. It's very difficult to isolate those domains. And I can tell you the secret how to do that. In this particular case, only the arsenic domain, arsenic terminated domain will give you the ARPS signal. The other terminated domain, we never got any signal. So that is ARPS complication, but yes. So this is, in this case, we're lucky. For some reason, the arsenic terminated domain gives you, it has good spectral behavior. And this is usually the case in many ARPS. Some surface terminations give you ARPS signal, others don't. So that's why we are lucky that from the other domain we don't get affected, because the ARPS emission intensity is weak. And we check that by doing STM, that the cleavage texture, when it's arsenic domain, it has one type of electronic structure. When you have the other termination, tantalum or niobium termination, you have the other type of stuff. Yes. So in this case, we got lucky in ARPES, but STM people.
So do they yes. see like half for this type and that
I,
type?
Well, it depends on the termination and.
No. What I meant is when you cleave this, yeah. do you have like half?
No, we see preferential. Actually, we see that
mostly
arsenic domain. Arsenic even in STM, we see that arsenic domain kind of dominates. At least the samples we study.
But in terms of structure, it should be half and half, right?
Half and half. It's a simple calculation, right? Because the mechanical strength of the two surfaces are not the same. So when they cleave, it may be it's easier to cleave when it cleaves arsenic terminated. It may not be easier to cleave. Yeah. No, we see other surfaces as well. Yeah.
Next question.
Yeah.
My question is for the first part of your talk. So when you're trying to determine the order parameter in the structures, so you fit into S wave and P wave. At the same time, there is spin orbits. It's substantial spin orbit coupling in your system, so there is spin momentum locking. So can you explain, because generically I would think that there is a mixture of the two. So when you say you fit into one or another, what exactly are you doing?
Oh,
taking
this...
into account that there might be some you know, superposition of S wave and P wave.
Right, so in this case, we are trying to assume there are two things we are trying to do. One, we are trying to so this is the crude test. We are just trying to fit it with a Dynes function, the bulk proximity and the surface proximity, and see how much it deviates. And then we are trying to do another calculation with our collaborators, where we are assuming that the system is like a helical Cooper pair. And including spin orbit, and then we can calculate the helical pair amplitude. Actually, this is given in great detail in the supplementary of our paper. We can tell the amplitude and how all those things difference. So that contribution came from Matthew Gilbert's work at Illinois. He has done those calculations for us. You can find those details in the supplementary of the Nature Physics paper. Yes.
There's a question here.
Yeah.
So can you look at the momentum dependence of the penetration depth into the bulk of your Fermi arc state?
Yes. We haven't done that yet. At this point, we are just doing one thing. But yes, that would be interesting. Yes, we can do that. Yeah. In fact, you can see that in the actual data. Let me go. So there's a whole lot to do, how the bulk and surface are connecting. You just go change photon energy in a synchrotron beamline. So there is interesting work from MIT on this photonic crystals, and that's bulk dominated, right? We can sort of tune our system to go from one limit to the other. Yeah. And study the bulk surface interaction and all of that.
Okay, so let's thank you again.
Yeah, thank you.
And so with this, we conclude the morning session on topological phases, and let's go for lunch.